You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 107. This episode, whoops.
I'm your host, Frank Mateo, and joining me today are my fabulous roundtable crew of Green Lantern enthusiasts. Colton, always present, always available, always ready for birthday parties. Eric, normally I would say he's playing DC, you know, the new DCUO game, but I guess he's not today. Andrew, NDB, the creator of the Green Lantern forums, and Brandon, who... pretty much always includes anything Wally West related in his underoos.
So there's nothing in there today, huh, Brandon?
Ouch.
And today we're going to be covering the full spectrum of Green Lantern books that came out in the past several weeks, which will be Green Lantern Core, number 3, Voodoo, number 3, featuring Kyle Rayner, Green Lantern New Guardians, number 3, also featuring Kyle Rayner, and Green Lantern's animated number 0, not featuring Kyle Rayner, but it's the prelude, or actually the not prelude, actually a continuation of the Green Lantern anime series that recently aired on Cartoon Network. To start off, Brandon, do we have any news?
I don't think so.
Well, there you have it, folks. No news today in the spectrum of Green Lantern, but stay tuned. Maybe something will come up with Ryan Reynolds' underpants or something. Quite possibly.
Green Lantern number 2. There's a lot of underpants today, huh?
A lot of underpants today. But let's move into the nitty gritty. Green Lantern Core number 3. Pretty much the head on conclusion of the gigantic war that started sprouted in Green Lantern Core number 2 with Guy Gardner, John Stewart in the middle of a gigantic battle in some forest green area of a planet. What do you guys think of this issue? This is pretty much the all battle issue, basically. Nothing but straight up fights. We see here little information given, but a lot of colorful work. Andrew, what do you think of this issue?
I dug it. I mean, it's kind of it's repeating sort of Tomasi's shtick with the whole here's some new Green Lanterns that you can get interested in, and we're going to kill them off.
Yeah.
But it's cool. It's entertaining. It's, you know, I can't knock these self-contained storylines too much. It's refreshing to see, and we probably won't be seeing them for another extended period of time once we get into like the next big event and all that. So I appreciate this. It's cool. Porter was a nice character.
Yeah, I want to say really quick, I guess that's kind of news, right? That they kind of announced that there's definitely going to be an event pretty soon.
Mm-hmm. How did Jeff put it? He said that soon he's going to reveal the big story behind everything that's going on right now in all the comics. Even unbeknownst to the writers that are writing these stories, like, no, right. there's a big story behind all that stuff.
What you guys were writing was absolutely not the real story at all, guys. Wait for this.
And explicitly, like, specifically, there's going to be a Green Lantern crossover with all this stuff. It's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
That's Jeff Johns and all the pots. Hats on all the pots. Colton, what do you think of Green Lantern Corps?
Well, besides the fact that the average expectant life of a Green Lantern is about 7 seconds, it seems, I really did enjoy the issue. I mean, getting to see the battle continue, you know, kind of continuing on with John and Guy. I really like the characters, and it's always good to see some of the old classics that we haven't seen in a while. But, you know, I just kind of want to see where this is going. I enjoyed the issue, but I'm more excited about what's coming than what happened. Mm. It's kind of a little bit more set up for me.
All right.
But I really did like it.
Brandon, what'd you think?
I thought it was a big step down from the previous issue. The action is still there. Guy Gardner tells awful jokes. All the classic Tomasi-isms are all there, but I don't know, the art took a turn for the worse with the different artists taking up for Fernando's absence, and that clearly was a step down. And it was nothing but action, you know. And I guess the split between Guy and his lanterns and John and his lanterns, that really didn't do anything for me. I'd be interested to see how long it lasts before they go back to it. But I don't know, when you're creating lanterns named, what was it?
I think his name is actually Teleporter Johnson.
Teleporter. It's like, yeah. Oh, come on.
Teleporter Jones.
This is from the guy who created a lantern after his last name. Like, at least do something that ridiculous. Don't just be lazy with it. I mean, how does that get past the editor? No, this is a very big letdown because Green Lantern Corps had been a solid book for 2 months straight. It's like Andrew said, it was self-contained. There was no New Guardians attached to it, no Red Lanterns. No, it was like completely refreshing. And then all we get is action here. There's like no setup for the villain, no insight to what their mischievous plans are. There's no nothing. I think the most interesting thing about this comic was the Andy Kubert cover and like, how much does that have to do with the comic? Absolutely nothing. The twist, like I said at the end, with John and Guy being separated does nothing for me because I don't – like, what am I to look forward to? More of the same? No, I'm very disappointed in this issue.
It's pretty true. I mean, the entire hook of this Green Lantern Corps issue was the fact that we were paired with the two publicly known Green Lanterns with their secret identity. And next thing you know, we have them split apart for who knows how much remainder of the story is. But we were supposed to see this gigantic dynamic between the two characters, and you know, Tomasi hasn't done much with them, really. Eric, what do you think? Especially of Lantern Porter's dramatic rescue.
I mean, I like that bit. It was interesting to I think it was kind of frustrating because when it's like characters are like, I can't port that much, and then it's like, oh, but I can. Because no one ever says they can't do anything in a superhero comic unless they're about to do it, you know? And I'm glad he died for that, at least just, you know, just to prove that, oh, it was kind of hard, you know? I mean, and I do appreciate bringing in new characters and wiping them out and stuff. I like Tomasi for that. And, you know, it's not exactly unpredictable because he's had certain characters like, you know,
but there's no setup there. It's not as if he's bringing in characters and giving them a personality. They're just speaking.
Yeah, and then get wiped out, yeah. No, I mean, I like that idea that there's characters that could show up and get smashed and stuff. It's like, at this point, he's got characters like Isamad who's been almost killed so many times that it's not really that big of a deal. And I mean, I kind of miss the days when, you know, Biz got killed and sporadically in the middle of a storyline and things like that. But, I mean, they're a little too death-happy with the Green Lanterns as it is. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, poor Gallius Zedd has died like so many times. And I love Gallius Zedd getting killed, but it's just a fact of life that he could kill. Anyway, about the issue itself, I actually liked the issue before this a lot. And I think this really was just more of the same was kind of the problem. I mean, I think when this reads together as a story, it's going to work because it's going to have – the action is going to be rising. But I think there's certain elements of the actual battle in the last issue where it was like really difficult to defeat like three guys. And then the cliffhanger was like, well, now there's hundreds. And basically they just stand in a circle and shoot at them. And it's kind of like, well, then I thought, why is it so much easier now because there's a couple more of you because there's, you know, the exponentially more of them. So the threat level kind of diminished. But it's basically the same as the issue before without really too much deviation. And, I don't know. I mean, I can't say that I didn't – there isn't a certain amount of interest for the characters getting separated at the end of the issue. It's kind of like as soon as they get separated, it's like, well, they should get wiped out immediately though. I mean, because the stakes have been altered and changed so much, I don't think the next page of the first page of the next issue is going to be everybody but John dying. It's going to be them fighting them off until they can get away. So I don't know. A certain amount of suspense gets diminished. I mean – one of the good reasons, I guess, why it's good to bring a character in and then kill him in the same issue is because, you know, people can die, but I don't think there's a lot of suspense, I guess, is the problem with this. And the bad guys aren't that interesting. They're kind of interesting to...
Exactly.
But we haven't seen the full scope of what they are
We
all
haven't
about
seen
yet.
Anything. They stole underwater and air.
It's the third issue, and I think, you know, I mean, it's fine, and they're kind of building them up, but I don't want them to kind of just whatever. I do think that it's a Green Lantern adventure where they're having Green Lantern adventures. I mean, as much as the bad guys are still having something to do with their willpower rings and can we just please have some bad guys that do something besides something to do with the ring?
Some evil people. Like, yeah. Just eat bad.
They're basically
people.
Just rechanneling the ring energy.
Yes. Yeah, so, I mean, at least it's not another core, I guess. Yeah. I mean, though I say all this, but then there, Tomasi, all the one-shots Tomasi did to end out the Emerald Warriors, I thought they were all terrible, you know? So, I don't know. I mean, you know, Guy Gardner, you know, shooting up a ship full of people and then letting that guy get murdered for saving his life. And then the next issue, Guy Gardner picking his ass while watching a spider eat half the Green Lantern Corps, and then the issue after that, Guy Gardner standing around while Batman solved the mystery. It wasn't exactly what I was looking for, but you know, again, it's good that it's got scale. Green Lantern comics are frequently missing scale. You know, that was one of the reasons people loved Sinister Corps War so much, because it was so big. But you know, this one actually has scale. Like, and there is a legitimate threat that these guys are committing, and there was in the second issue at least. We have to save all these people from this desperate situation while at the same time fighting two guys that are stronger than us. But now it's like there's 70 million guys that we're just standing around shooting them. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. You know, what are the stakes here, you know?
Can we mention that I feel like this is the month of Salak? Like, he's getting so much dialogue this month alone is just ridiculous. He was great in this issue. Like, he actually stood up and was like, look, this is a bad idea. You're going to die. You know, and that's, you know, the fact that he's not in front of that damn door should be, you know, we should be praising the fact that Tomasi did that. I think if we can get more of Salak the hero than Salak the puppet, then Tomasi's going on the right track for a good
series. I do want to say something about this, and I think there has to be a certain amount of back to basics kind of. You know, the Green Lantern comic that's going on, obviously it's all about, you know, the concept being completely changed with Sinestro in charge and him kind of leading Hal around by the nose. And New Guardians is obviously this, you know, Power Ranger team being assembled against the Guardians and stuff. And this is kind of the business as usual. I do want to say, though, that, I mean, considering the continuity hasn't changed, I find it alarming that so many characters just kind of okay with being Green Lantern Corps members after what happened with Sinestro and the Guardians, you know, in the last couple of years. And especially with Sinestro, where that –
yeah, he's still out there and they still know that.
Yeah, and exactly. And after the war, they were kind of like – they were so mad about it. But then, you know, there was just that one thing where –
yeah, we only had that one-shot issue where a lot of them were threatening to disband from the Green Lantern.
So
but yet they continued going.
You're asking for them to, you know, kill Sinestro off of Oa where he doesn't have backup. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, I think there's a certain amount of, like, why aren't they doing that? But I mean, even besides that, it's just – I think it's typical, and again, I know we rip on these Green Lantern comics so much, but it's typical of the Green Lantern comics where they introduce concepts, but they don't flesh them out to any kind of interesting – in any kind of interesting way. You know? I mean, the fact that Sinestro has been the number one enemy of the entire Corps for since the inception
–
I mean, for since Calvin first showed up. I mean, you know, and even if you want to do it logically – at least 5 years, you know, in new DC continuity. For 5 years, he's been doing terrible things. And even if you want to discount the fact that in old continuity, he blew up universes and stuff. In Sinestro Corps War, he's doing, you know, all kinds. I mean, Kilowog's planet's still gone. Kilowog's planet is still destroyed, you know, in the crisis, which didn't exist, and then destroyed again by Sinestro. I mean, there's a certain amount of, like, he's a genocidal maniac regardless of whatever. So, I mean, and even then, it's like the guys led wars to specifically destroy all these guys. So many Green Lantern died specifically because of Sinestro. I mean, why wouldn't you quit? I mean, it's ridiculous, you know?
It's unconscionable.
It's insane. And it's just one of those things where it's like it would be a legitimate sense of drama, but, you know. You know?
I mean, they could have done something where it's like all the lanterns that had a problem with Sinestro quit, and now here come these new lanterns that don't really have a problem with Sinestro because they don't really know too much.
Well, I think
he's been there before, right?
Yeah. Well, here's the deal, right? I think I think we had the four titles, Red Lanterns is a count, right? And then Green Lantern is specifically dealing with Sinestro being redeemed in this really ham-fisted way. And it's making a point to separate him from everybody because it'd be really hard to explain as to why this kind of thing is happening. But it's – even then, the Hal Jordan series, it's like only Hal Jordan and Sinestro are going to free an entire planet from Yellow Lanterns. It's like the Green Lanterns know they're there. Like when the truce first happened, they had Green Lanterns stationed there so they wouldn't just rape and murder people. And now it's like they're like – we left for some reason. I mean, why? You know.
Remember, the truce itself was never fleshed out at all. It was a concept that was put out there, but it was never at all fleshed out in the book itself. Someone offhandedly said there was a truce. None of the guardians ever admitted. None of the guardians ever admitted that there was a truce.
No, but the only guardian there was Ganthet, and he wasn't even with them anymore.
Yeah, that's true. It was kind of after the fact, like after, like, oh yeah, we still have this truce, and it was like, was there? Maybe there was. I don't remember.
There was still a. There was still
I don't think it was actually said.
there's always a weirdness about the laws of Oa and the truce that was going on with the Green Lantern. It never made any sense.
What's the argument of the truce anyway? I mean, you can't have a truce between. You can't have, like, you know, not to be like. United States military versus Al Qaeda. It's not like we don't send Al Qaeda things, say, all right, truce. You can keep murdering and blowing up buildings. We're not going to bother you as long as you leave American soil alone.
Fundamental problem.
I mean, you know, Korugar is under the jurisdiction of the Lanterns. You know, they don't own it. They can't cede the territory. You know, the Green Lanterns work as a functioning police galactic force that's accepted by all these sentient species and stuff. They're like Starfleet. They can't just – they're an organization. They don't own Korugar and they cede the territory. You know, they specifically are like, I'm sorry. You know, we can have a truce, but please stop eating people. You know, that should be the number one rule of the truce. Stop eating people and we'll leave you alone. But the Sinestro Corps in its entire MO, its entire business is making people scared.
It would be easier to accept if the Guardians were just like, Sinestro has been pardoned. When they came out of the chamber last time and they were just like, Sinestro has been pardoned, he's no longer enemy number one, get the fuck over it. Now if they quit after that, fine. But at least then we'll have a resolution and
we'll have a reasoning.
You know?
he showed up and they're like, we're not sure what we're gonna do, but we're gonna let him make Green Lantern run around.
Like, I mean, we're just gonna let this happen. We're just gonna play this out.
And so
the oldest beings in the universe apparently do not understand the meaning of freaking.
They play about a wing. I mean,
Exactly, and I think the only explicit rejection we're seeing of the Guardians is happening in New Guardians, and it's for a completely different reason. Like, you know, nobody cares. You know.
All right. So. Well, on that note, let's move on from Green Lantern Corps to not a Green Lantern book, but featuring Green Lantern Voodoo number 3. Where Green Lantern Kyle Rayner shows up. But this is, of course, has to take place some point before Green Lantern New Guardians, which we'll get to later in the episode. But, yes, we see pretty much Green Lantern Kyle Rayner coming in to, arrest a bunch of people who are sending space signals into intergalactic transmissions who happen to be shapeshifters. Now, if anyone's actually paying attention to the Voodoo series that is listening to the cast, it's basically about... what, let's say, hot alien shapeshifter who doesn't really know what she's doing, or somewhat knows what she's doing.
Yeah, well, essentially, we talked about this book on another podcast, the Graph Sequential Podcast, DC New, but we talked about just the idea that this kind of stops the – if you're interested in the Voodoo series, it stops the cold. I don't know how much we want to talk about this as an issue in and of itself, but for a Kyle Rayner appearance – I have a kind of a problem with, and it seems funny, Ron Mars as Kyle Rayner, because I feel like Ron Mars doesn't like Kyle Rayner, you know? And every time he shows up, he's either doing something really stupid or getting kind of beat up. And this kind of fits the mold. It's not as it's not as bad as, like, his flashback issue that came out earlier this year or you know, the last couple of stories. Oh, that this villain shows up to destroy the Earth and he just throws him. Like, you know, I beat you, I'm going to throw you into space. Like, that's... It's a great way to resolve the conflict, you know, like you arrest, it's like you catch a guy trying to blow up your house and you pick him up and you throw him down the street like that. He'll leave me alone forever. Whatever. So there's a lot of like, this issue doesn't really exist as an issue of Voodoo. It's kind of like, this is a very typical, issue that they do for anti-hero series. Like Voodoo, where the character is kind of like, you get the sense that they mean to do well, but they keep doing evil stuff. And there's always the third issue or the fourth issue or maybe the second or sixth issue, depending. Within the first 5 issues, another superhero shows up to intrinsically say this character is inherently good.
Let's admit this issue itself is nothing but a filler to be anything else.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying like the idea behind the issue is to have the issue that explicitly shows that Voodoo is a good guy. Without actually having to really show it. And the way you do that is you have a character that is a good guy, Kyle Rayner, show up and judge her favorably. I mean, that's the entire point of the issue. And to introduce completely unfunny, you know, redneck Hooter girl stereotypes for aliens, like, I kind of like the Voodoo series so far, except for the fact that it's really derogatory, the first issue, but this issue was kind of a little bit of a waste of time. I mean, Kyle doesn't come off looking like too much of a jerk in it, I guess.
Not at all. Why would he look like a jerk?
They get away?
I wouldn't say jerk, but a little bit incompetent.
Naive. I would say naive at best.
They make a big spectacle of him making the wrong choice. I mean, that's.
Well, I don't know if it's
wrong. Let me grab Brandon. Let's hear your rebuttal here, because I know you have a problem. Yeah.
We've been through this entire year has been about how much you guys absolutely hate how Tony Bedard has handled Kyle Rayner. How every issue, Kyle gets his ass beaten. And yeah, now, absolutely no.
But an encore, here comes Ron Mars, the creator, to do it.
So when Ron Mars comes back and
I know, it sucks.
Kyle barely loses, and I put that in like air quotes, because the only real loss here is the fact that they get away.
Well, you have to think, we're not just talking about him fighting. We're talking about the fact that these are murderous aliens who want to conquer the Earth, who eat people.
They didn't murder. Okay. We only know.
You can't say she hasn't murdered. She's murdered plenty.
She did.
I have to assume those guys did. I'm just saying, I assume those guys do too.
Okay.
You don't have a death blaster in your garage for no other reason than to kill somebody.
And all right, let's look at things realistically. If you're a Green Lantern and you patrol sectors, can you honestly say that every time you go out there, you're going to come back with a victory?
No, right. That's fine. The point, in fact, is when you watch a guy, I mean, Tony Bedard, he just used to get beat up, and I guess his success rate personally wasn't wonderful, because I don't remember him resolving any conflicts in Tony Bedard's run. But specifically, if you talk about say the comparable is a police officer who runs into a drug bust and he sees a dealer and he sees a scale, like just a dude who's buying drugs, right? And the dude who's buying drugs takes a run, and then the dealer takes a run, and he looks at the dude buying drugs, and he's like, all right, I'm going to go after the dealer. Goes to the dealer gets away. You don't say, nice job running after that dealer cop. You say, fuck, you didn't catch the dealer. And you didn't get the other guy. It's not a victory. It's a loss. I mean, regardless of the fact that he doesn't get annihilated like he does every time Tony Bedard puts pen to paper. But, you know.
He held that entire situation.
For a little while, until they got away.
Okay. It was a nice intro.
It looked better. He looks better than he does normally. I'm just saying, point in fact is.
So why are you complaining? Is my problem.
Because he still fails. He still doesn't do very well.
It's not a Kyle Rayner book.
I don't care if it's a Kyle Rayner book. He still fails.
Okay. Let's hear from Calder. He's the only person I haven't heard about the issue yet.
I do kind of agree with both sides. On one hand, it was a little bit better of a showing than some of you guys have been complaining about. But at the same time, I would have liked to see Kyle pull together a little bit. I mean, even if Voodoo had to get away, I would have liked to have seen him stop the aliens trying to escape, at least, have some net gain.
Mm-hmm.
What about the dialogue? Did everybody like the Kyle dialogue?
I have to admit the Kyle dialogue itself was not the best, I have to say. It didn't really pull me in.
It's definitely different from Tomasi and
right.
Felt like Kyle to me.
I thought it was actually a little closer to the way Bedard's been writing it, not exactly like the way Mars has written it in the past. Very like Kyle's seen more balance in the last couple of years of writing. I think especially under Tomasi, he's always seemed like a very balanced and level-headed character. Versus Mars was kind of like a bit more like self-centered or a little bit more. I mean, people complained it was a little Peter Parker-y, but it was definitely a little Peter Parker-y without the humor. But this definitely seemed like a more level-headed guy. I mean, this definitely seemed like a grown-up version of the guy Ron Mars was writing.
Right.
I definitely thought I was reading Ron Mars writing the Peter Tomasi Kyle Rayner, but I mean, it's just kind of a weird deviation. It's not.
Well,
like
I felt like. Well, I think when we talked to Ron, what was that, 2 years ago? Jeez, that's what he would. That's the kind of guy that he would be. That he would, seek out a Tomasi issue to see how Kyle is doing these days.
The voice of Kyle now.
Yeah, I think to write it like Grant Morrison would in 2000, which is 10 years ago or whatever, would be absolutely dreadful. If he was like, cool, yeah, man, and Jerry Springer references, then we'd have a problem with it. But it still felt weird to me. It just didn't mesh right. I can see him going for the grown Kyle, but it just felt off. I guess I still envision Kyle as that JLA Kyle.
I still had a problem with the only line where he said, dude, I'm from California.
I guess.
Like that because it's like, oh,
it's a drawback to the fact that Ron Mars is the only guy who remembers. Oh yeah, I created him in California.
Yeah, I think Ron Mars is kind of a dick. He probably noticed. Yeah.
It's like, oh, by the way, he's from California, motherfuckers. Remember?
Not that? A New Yorker, California. Anyway, let's move on from the Voodoo issue to Green Lantern New Guardians number 3, more Kyle Rayner centric, and it's taking place right after the all powerful, all magical rings get on Kyle's fingers, and he goes bananas on all the Guardians apparently. Now, as far as this issue is concerned, again, it has two artists during this issue. You know, Tyler Kirkman and Eric. Pronounce the name for me.
Harvey Schultz Bow.
Thank you. I knew you would say it correctly and with
Love
emphasis.
Bow.
And I have to say again, for the fact that it has two artists on the issue, it doesn't really draw away from everything that's going on in the issue, because again, it's mainly just to catch up what happened right afterwards of the second from the second issue itself. But of course, Tyler Bow is a much better artist in my opinion than Tyler Kirkman. I'm sorry, Tyler Kirkman, if you're paying attention to this podcast. But for the issue itself, Brandon, what do you think of it?
This and GLC are nothing but like
the battle.
Yeah, it's like an extended cut of the previous issue. granted, we get a little bit more here than we got in GLC with a bunch of cameos from the rest of the Lantern Corps, but it still felt like, you know, just an extended fight scene. I disagree. I do not like Harvey Talabau or whatever his name is.
I don't actually think how you pronounce it.
I think his close-ups are disgusting. I think a lot of people are going to make a big deal about the Kyle Rayner panel where he looks disgusting and homeless. But
are you talking about the Kirkman panel? Because, that was disgusting.
Yeah, but I think the rest of Kirkman's work in the issue was just fine. I mean, there's nothing dynamic for either of them to draw. I think the most interesting panel was Salik punching the crap out of Kyle.
which you know, concurs. This is the swashbuckling of Salik, you know, the ladies' man Salik, and compared to the administrator.
Yeah.
The administrator Salik.
Right, and then Tony Bedard can't write 20 pages of any comic without having Kyle getting his ass kicked. Yeah.
I still think it was a solid issue for what it was, being an extended cut of the last issue. I'm interested to see where what the deal is with Larfleeze and his living construct, Glomulus, or I forgot how to say it.
Glomulus.
Yeah, it's a weird little dynamic that hasn't been explained, and you think we would have gotten to it since Agent Orange.
At some point since Agent Orange, we would have assumed there would have been some sort of explanation on these Orange Lantern entities, but
Yeah, but I guess it's on Bedard's checklist, and it's part of the mystery to what's drawing these rings to Kyle, which I think
there kind of has been an explanation for, you know, the orange constructs. I mean, they're not just constructs. There's some kind of entity there, whether it's a soul or what have you, but there's something
but
more.
Are the creatures still alive? You know, that he's
in a sense,
taken
they're not. I mean, I think that's what's good about this, because I think this at least gives you a sense that he's going to definitively define it one way or the other, because that's what I liked about this particular issue.
I also like the touch at the end of the issue where they actually, in the background of all the Orange Lantern constructs, you see a lot of unused designs that were created back in the way beginning when we had those whole things set up.
Oh, the Philip Tan design.
Yes, all those old Philip Tan designs that he made, but that no one ever did.
That's very true. Andrew, what do you think so far of this issue?
I'll talk about the art first. I actually didn't have a huge problem with the art. I thought I would, because I didn't like that other guy's work in the last issue. Like, it really distracted me. It pulled me out. But like in this issue, it actually seemed to kind of complement Kirkman's work. Like, there's the whole bit like where Kyle gets fucked up after the rings leave him, and he's kind of like an old man shriveled up for a minute. And you know, and when the art switched there, it actually worked and actually suited the moment a little bit. And didn't have a huge problem with that. The story was it's good for like a mid arc issue, I suppose. I mean, this Kyle becoming like the Mega Lantern was kind of a neat surprise in the last issue. In this one, it's like, oh, it's another surprise that he didn't actually have the seventh ring to begin with. So it's kind of like this half-assed Uber Lantern, but whatever. it was cool.
I have to say though, the Omega Kyle Rayner color scheme just doesn't work for me. I'm sorry, the gray. Yeah, the gray on black, and then all
the. It
could have been a lot worse. I gotta admit, but it wasn't really dynamic enough. It felt like they really didn't know what color to use. So it defaulted what goes with black, like a lighter shade of black.
I think what we saw Guy put on what color is it? He had pink and red or something like that, and that didn't mesh well. And so I think I was a little relieved to just see the dull gray. I think Eric talked about this elsewhere about how Kyle should have been, you know, the last thing he should have been was angry because all the emotions cancel each other out. And I thought, actually, no, I think anger is the one thing you want to be in this situation when you have all this power.
And a horrible costume. You should be really pissed off.
Yes, focus. I have a horrible costume. You're pissing me off. I have power. I'm going to get angry. Why not?
It's kind of like he may have had all the rings, or at least most of the rings, but it wasn't an even balance. He was in a complete emotional balance. Some emotions were stronger than others, so there was more emphasis.
Well, even if he had the orange ring, though, I don't think greed would have helped anything.
I think this is really the precursor to him actually mastering it, because this is just his first attempt. He didn't even expect it. I think he was just not ready that he'll grow more into such a role.
I think that'll be one of the goals. It's like him eventually mastering things, but I think it'll be this constant carrot that's dangled, never quite reached, but like always like something he's going towards, kind of a thing.
Yeah. Soon enough, he'll be able to form Voltron.
He can skip the rings, just go straight for all the entities.
Right, Eric. Give me a opinion.
Well, I want to do mention what Brandon had touched on, the idea that I think it's kind of like it's standard to assume when he gets all the rings. I think you see this kind of thing happen in comics a lot. You know, guys get the ultimate power and they get the Infinity Gauntlet and they go mad with power, and that's basically what happened. And people, you know, they write mad with power and they just make the guy go rah, 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 and get angry at everybody. And I think logically speaking, there's really no reason just putting all the rings on your finger would make you, you know, ultra powerful. I mean, technically, I mean, there's a sense where it burns him out. And, you know, when Harvey Teleballad draws it, he's just beat up. And when Tyler Kirkham draws it, he's a 45,000-year-old man, you know, with long gray hair and stuff. So that's one of the inconsistencies in art that really hurts the issue. But anyway, we talked about this on the other podcast we do, and it was just the idea that, like, you know, the red is completely destroyed by the blue, and the blue strengthens the green exponentially. You know, the purple only works when it's amplifying all the other ones, so you're going to be even more powerful, you know. And it's just one of those things where what's the pervading emotion really going to be? And a lot of them cancel each other out, and, you know, and we know that the yellow and green have some kind of relationship. And it would have been, I don't know, not to be like whatever. I mean, it's kind of, you do expect him to get all the rings, become really powerful, and then go crazy and get angry at everyone because that's just the standard. But how much more interesting would it have been to see something different happen? You know, I mean, especially considering we did see, well, not to be like whatever, we did see already see a story where Kyle got ultimate power and it was dope and he did not go crazy, you know? So, I mean, why not? But I don't know. It's obviously just the one issue for the one. Okay. Second,
you kind of can't forget that he was getting his ultimate power in the middle of about to be tortured and beaten by a bunch of crazed immortals.
I mean, even
you
then,
can't blame him for getting a little bit upset.
Well, as I'm saying, I mean, the idea is that there's certain aspects of it that just don't work. I mean, like, if he was getting angry, does his heart disappear? Does his heart get torn out? I mean, there's just certain things that would happen when you put the ring on that didn't happen to him. And, you know, it's kind of like he gets to make up the rules wherever he wants because the rings are basically magic and they function magically, you know, at this point, so it doesn't matter. But it kind of takes me out of it because it's just another button to press to make someone in the Green Lantern universe ultra powerful. I mean, like, what does this have to do with the entities? Well, it used to be you get the entity in you and you can control the fabric of reality, but now it's like, oh, you're just kind of tougher than Sodom Yat, you know, or if you're not Sodom Yat, you're not as tough as Sodom Yat. I mean, these things kind of like diminish over time. But yeah, the issue itself, I do like Harvey Tullabau's art. I don't like Tyler Kirkham's art. It's just stiff. The anatomy doesn't really work. I mean, the pages are crammed. It looks amateurish. I mean, and Harvey Tullabau is much just disgusting. There's a lot of dynamism and fluidity to the work, and just like, you know,
what is dynamite about that?
Not dynamite.
Dynamic. What is like, dynamic about it? They did not do anything but floating.
It's the definition of dynamic. A character's arm is stretched out in a way towards the screen that takes full advantage of 3D scaling. And, you know, as a character is just floating there, they're doing some kind of horrifically extraneous pose. Which
you know what I think it is?
Having the most intense experience of their life.
I think you just don't like Tyler so much that anybody stepping in.
I believe Harley Till the Bow drew Aftermath, part of it, and I was a big proponent of his then. So, I mean, there was a couple artists in Aftermath, and I don't think Tyler drew any of Aftermath. If he did, then I don't know. I don't remember. But I remember specifically out of the 7 or 8 artists that worked on Aftermath, all the Harvey Tull about pages, I was like, these are great. And it's just – it's a matter of, like, it looks like a different – it's not the DC style. You know, it's more advanced than, like, an Image style, which Tyler Kirk was going for. It's certainly more interesting than the typical DC style and stuff. And it's just something you normally see, and not to be, like, you know – limited in my viewpoint, but it's something you normally see in like heavy metal or some European comic that has a little bit more license to let the artist draw whatever he wants to draw, and it just works here. I mean, in certain characters like Arkilla look different than he's ever looked, and you know, and that's how we got really interesting designs for characters like you know, Atrocitus and Larfleeze, who have cool designs that have been completely butchered by everyone who drew them because they can't draw the same way that Philip Tan draws and stuff. I mean, it's just kind of like he reminds me a lot of Philip Tan, except his figures are a little bit more defined and he knows what to do with the characters on the page and stuff. I just like it a lot.
I think it's funny you say that because Larfleeze pops up at the end and Tyler Kirkham's version of depiction of Larfleeze is the best we've seen since.
You know, it's funny you should say that, besides the fact that it's insane. It's just, you're obviously joking, that's why I'm saying it's funny. No, but it's funny you should say that because I think that's the exact example, that's the best example I can think of where it's just such a generic drawing and it takes away all the power of that design and the image and stuff. And I don't know. It's just, the issue itself was unbalanced basically, like, I think I 100% agree with what Brandon was saying, that it's basically just the same thing as the first two issues, but dragged out a little further. You know, and I was a big fan of the first issue to the point where I was saying it was one of the best comics I bought that week. But once, you know, and I was kind of hoping that it wasn't going to be like all the other GLC issues that Tony Bedard wrote, where it was like 17 issues of them standing there pushing a guy, you know, and losing, you know, but that's basically what's happening. And the next issue promises answers, and I'm like, you know, I'm glad you're giving me answers, considering you haven't given me anything so far. But it's issue 4 and nothing's happened. You're not really answering anything that's had any kind of suspenseful merit to it. I do like the idea that it is setting up explicitly of Kyle versus them sort of a thing, and I like that. You know, and what is Kyle's last, you know, thing to do as a member of the Green Lantern Corps? I don't know if that, yeah. I don't think necessarily means they're going to take his ring away, but even if they do.
Maybe it's to knock out Sinestro.
Yeah, right.
Finally get vengeance for his mother.
Well, I tried to moan when he started doing that last year, but I mean, earlier this year.
All right. So, yeah, pretty much that we'll wrap up the top for New Guardians. The only thing I am going to say is that there was one slight thing in the issue itself. It could be nothing, could be something. Was the fact that Gansett throughout the whenever you see him in the issue itself was still wearing the Green Lantern ring during the whole fisticuffs solution. Yeah, he's still wearing a Green Lantern ring. Even in the last bit where Gansett was trying to remove Kyle's ring, you see a little spark of energy.
Wait a minute. I'm looking at a few pages from the end, and all the Guardians are wearing a Green Lantern ring.
No, it's only Gansett.
No. Look at the one where Kyle's saying, like, Walker, quick, use the ring to heal me. Look at the panel above that. All the Guardians have Green Lantern rings.
Let's check this
Whoops.
Whoops.
That actually could be a mistake. You're right. There's actually a page beforehand where when they're all staring in front of the orange ring, they're all wearing Green Lantern rings. You're actually correct. Wow, that is actually a mistake. Or it could be something. Who knows? This might be something completely or degree.
I'm sure it's exactly. And again, on the page where Kyle's saying that doesn't make sense. Larfleeze wouldn't just give them to me. The last panel there, where they're you have three Guardians there saying like, "What is this? Lantern Salak?" Yeah, they clearly all have rings. They're even making like energy and shit.
That's an artist mistake because we know Tony would know that he's the one who made Gansett, you know, go through the hard work to get a ring. So,
and again, every page they got the rings.
Right. You're actually correct. Wow.
It's got to be an artist mistake, or they decided during their last meeting that maybe we should arm ourselves.
We should get some rings.
Apparently, these are the best things of all time, right? They could kill a Guardian. Let's move on to.
We forgot. I don't know if I heard it, but I think we forgot to mention that Side returns the first time in forever.
Side does return at the end of this issue, especially the fact that it's been how long now since she's been promised to Larfleeze?
Has Larfleeze ever actually left her head since we last saw him?
Yes.
She's just been standing on her this whole time.
Floating in like
She wasn't in the Lex Luthor storyline. So.
Right, I mean, after that.
doesn't her appearance here like strengthen the mystery for, or at least, you know, get you more interested in the next issue? I think that's the best part about
this. It's the best hook for the issue.
Well, I'll tell you something true, though. I think that it's kind of like Tony Bedard's making up a brand new mystery that wasn't around before, so it's frustrating to me. I also don't like that the issue kind of changes on the end, that this was, I mean, hopefully it's not, I don't think it is, but it's all like, and it all was Larfleeze's idea. I'm like, there's no way
it seems like such a throwaway line that it was ridiculous when it actually came up at the end of the issue where Larfleeze actually does show up. We're like, yes, it is all my gigantic scheme. It's like, no, you're not that smart, man. I'm sorry.
I how much of the series is based on just dudes fighting dudes, and every issue is like, this guy gets to fight that guy next issue. They don't do a lot of fighting. I mean, guy makes one move, makes another move. And when they're like, you know, oh, shit, it's dudes that are fighting. Next issue, Larfleeze fights the Guardians. Like, it's really going to be 10 pages of them fighting.
Punch is hurt.
So, basically, it's Green Lantern Corps number 2.
All right. All right, so yeah, so, you know, we've given our thoughts on Green Lantern New Guardians and so on and so forth. Let's move on to Green Lantern's Animated Number 0. Again, the issue that takes place a little bit after Green Lantern's The Animated Series that aired on Cartoon Network a couple of weeks back. Now, for those who've never seen a, like, and pretty much like an alternate universe book of a popular anime series for DC Universe, it's pretty much, again, not a lot like the original titles that come out for DC's original lineups. It's normally, you know, drawn in more of a cartoonish way and normally more of a kid-friendly way. This issue itself was not that kid-friendly. It actually has more information than you can possibly even understand.
On the first page alone.
In the first page alone, mind you. And to be honest, it's artwork itself not as great as, you know, as you can possibly believe. So, I'll move on to Eric. Eric, what do you think of this issue?
I don't know. I do want to say that I don't think it was much more complicated than a kid could get. There's a lot of writing and stuff, but it justifies – one of the things you can understand about kids reading comics as opposed to moronic adults like us is that kids will read the same comic a million times, you know? So if you give them an issue of Green Lantern, the kid's going to get like maybe a year's use out of it, and he's not going to take it with him every day. But, you know, it's kind of like they're going with the argument that more content per page is better because the kid's going to get more out of it, you know? And even besides that, it's there's just a couple of really interesting concepts, but most of this issue is just nonsense flying around fighting. I didn't like the issue at all. I thought the art wasn't really clean enough for me to really enjoy it. It looked thrown together. There wasn't really anything interesting about the story, and if you want to really get down to the nitty-gritty, there's the whole story hinges on Hal finding a black box. Where did he find it? Where did it come from? All of a sudden, he's talking to the computer. It's like, you found that box. He's this box that it is in his hand? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's almost like an absurdist fantasy a version of a story, you know, and it's not really interesting. There's nothing really to it. I would not have spent money on it. It definitely seems like kind of a quick cash in, and it's not enjoyable. It wasn't really enjoyable, you know, in any real way. I don't even know what to say about it. It's just one of those things where it's kind of like they can't do too much, I guess, with the concept because of the cartoon. They don't really know what's going on, so they're basically just treading water until something happens, and they don't really give you too much new information in this. It's just kind of an excuse to have the issue happen, you know? So I don't know much to say about it. Not a lot of fun.
All right. Calden, what do you think? Give me a positive note here.
Well, let's see. I mean, I thought the art was fine for what it was, you know, go on, that kind of stylized cartoon look. I mean, they couldn't do exactly the CG, but, you know, they did a comparable design, I think. And, of course, they're not going to start with they're going to assume that the kids reading the comic had, in fact, started with the TV series. I'm not sure if that'll be the same case with the number one issue, but I thought it was a fine little continuation with their random adventures and the outer space. I mean, it wasn't the most creative thing ever, but it was nice to see Kilowog come around and fight with Hal, you know, deal with the Red Lantern a little more. I was just a little wondering how this is going to, if this is going to end to be the same type of story all the time where they have to fight these enemies, but there's always someone they have to save in this mysterious device. I don't know if that's just going to be this type of story style where it's going to emphasize that every single fight has to be to save this one random creature that they're going to try to use as weapon.
Yeah, and I don't read Tiny Titans, but I mean, from my understanding, this is some of the guys involved in this is the same team behind Tiny Titans and stuff. And
yep.
I mean, it's kind of like, and I know they did some of the Young Justice comics as well, and yep. A couple of them are okay. The Young Justice comics are good, and some of them aren't that great, you know. And this definitely seems like a real letdown in terms of how great you hear about these guys and how they're really doing these great all ages comics and stuff. And they, I mean, I don't know. It's not that interesting. It's not that fun, you know. I mean, I don't know. If I was a kid, I'd be like, bah, you know. I mean, it's kind of an excuse for it to be written. It's not really an excuse for it to be written poorly, you know, because we know they can do better. So I don't know.
I did expect a little bit more fun considering it was the writers from Tiny Titans.
Yeah, I honestly was expecting a little bit more of a lightheartedness in comparison to you know, the other Green Lantern titles that we're getting, especially this is supposed to be an all ages book based on the animated series. Brandon, what do you think of the issue?
I thought it was decent. Obviously, it wasn't as fun as expected, like you guys said. But I thought the story was simple enough that kids would enjoy it. It's obvious that the writers were treated to the premiere episode, saw that Kilowog liked hammers, so every construct he used in this issue was a hammer. Hal Jordan is an impulse guy. That's played out here in the compute and the plane talks. They got all the things from the premiere episode and they put it into this one comic, and I think that was their job, that was their duty, and they handled it. Unfortunately, they weren't able to work in any comedy that you get out of the Tiny Titans, which, by the way, heavily relies on previous knowledge like 95% of the time. But I think obviously, expectations might have been a little high on our parts coming from the acclaimed all-ages writers, but I still think this was a solid effort. I think you guys are a little harsh on the art. I think we get more design in this issue from the artists on the Red Lanterns than we get from Ed Bennis on Red Lanterns. I mean, if you look closely,
I do agree with you on there.
Every detail on the Red Lanterns is like detail. They got different boots, they got different shoulder pads, different wrist gloves. Like, sure, they may be replaceable just by their features. They're big hulking bad guys, but you know, and he put time in to design their costumes, even if it is just a swing of a line or a erasing of a pencil. There's little things in there that distinguish it and best it of a book we're paying $2.99 for every month, just, you know, and that's supposed to be from the critically acclaimed Peter Milligan, you know? And I don't know. I could go on talking about how it was bad and how it just, the story was blah and all that, but you know, it was simple. It was decent.
All right. I can respect that. We'll scratch that one. All right, so pretty much that's it for our talk on the Green Lantern issues that came out this week. Hopefully you enjoyed our rant and reviews, our nitpicks, but you know, our respective love for the Green Lanternness. Until then, hopefully you'll stay tuned for the next episode. Till then, stay green.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can also email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at @theGLCorps.
And be sure to check out our YouTube channel at youtube.com/GLSpotlight.
You can reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814.
Thanks for listening, and check us out next time, and please stop masturbating when I'm talking to you.
Be sure to check out Kirby Crackle, performers of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at www.kirbycracklemusic.com. Also check out the Roy Clark Method, performers of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at freeweb.com/Roy Clark Method.
I have this magic ring. It is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me. It says, how? What have you done with your life? People around you keep dying. Use your will to right the wrong. And don't make us wait for too long.
Stay green.
Or don't.
Yay. Or not.
Or not. You know, you don't really need to say green, you know.
It's sick of black color.
Yeah,
we're sick of that shit, too.
Yeah, we're pretty much sick of the whole greenness. Yeah, pick another, like a nice lavender or something. You might enjoy that.
Oh, forget that. Go plaid.
No color. No, burgundy. Nice burgundy.